Let me start out with an apology, brother. I just discovered last night I had the meeting today, so I hadn't prepared for a study. So you're going to have to listen to a discourse. And it's pretty part one of two parts. Part two will be next Sunday. Both parts are on faith. We're looking at faith in the Old Testament today and faith in the New Testament next Sunday. Today we're going to look at specifically, well, a lot of verses we missed, four great acts of Moses' faith. Our text, although the studies of the Exodus, our text is from Hebrews, where Paul selects certain faiths of Moses. If he were to select the four most outstanding acts of faith in Moses' life, what four would you choose? It probably would differ from one to one. I'll give you the four I would choose. I would choose when he faced down Pharaoh. The faith to go into the temple, into the palace, and tell Pharaoh, let my people go. To me, that was an act of great faith, of great courage on Moses' part, especially doing it nine times. Crossing the Red Sea would certainly be an act of great faith. When you're trapped in by all sides and need to cross the Red Sea. Receiving the law at Sinai, traveling up a mountain because God says you'd go up a mountain, not knowing what's going to happen, you get to the top, and then being given two tables of law and bring down, and then do that seven times. Seven times Moses ascended. That to me is great faith. And arguing with God to preserve Israel. When God said, let me alone, I'm going to cut these people off, being a nation. And Moses had the audacity, or better to say the faith, to tell God, please don't do that. If you do that, think of what will happen to your name. As though God hadn't already thought about that. But Moses had the, and then God listens to Moses and changes the plan of actions there. But you know, as it's so often in Hebrews 11, Paul does not think as you and I think. The Apostle Paul does not choose these four acts. In fact, we were studying Hebrews 11 on our Tuesday night study, and I was surprised how many times Paul chooses an act of faith for different patriarchs that I would not have chosen. I would have chosen something else that was more important. For instance, he chooses Isaac, the blessing of his sons. I would have chosen Isaac being willing to be a sacrifice. To me, that was a greater act of faith. But Paul has a special reason for choosing what he chooses. So let's look at what Paul chooses. Paul's four selections are refusing the royal title in Pharaoh's court, fleeing into the wilderness when Moses fled from the hand of Pharaoh, instituting the Passover, and at least I agree with you on this one, crossing the Red Sea. But you notice the question mark. We'll get to the question mark as we study Hebrews 11 together. Hebrews 11, 24 to 29. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the approach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Second, by faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him as invisible. Third, through faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. And fourth, by faith, and here's where the question mark comes in, it does not say by faith Moses passed, but by faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which Egyptians are saying to do were drowned. So Paul's four selections are refusing to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, forsaking Egypt, keeping the Passover, and with Israel passing through the Red Sea. But before we look at these four acts, we're going to look at one more act of faith that is mentioned by Paul, not attributed to Moses, and really not an act of faith by Moses, but affecting Moses. In Exodus 1:22, we recall the law that Pharaoh had given. Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born, you shall cast into the river, and every daughter, you shall save alive. And there went a man of the house of Levi and took a wife, to a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. Here is an act of faith regarding Moses, but really an act of faith by his mother, the faith of Jochebed. I'd like to look at what the components of Jochebed's faith. In Hebrews 11:23, this act is mentioned. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child and they're not afraid of the king's commandment. Notice the comment in here that their faith was activated because they saw he was a proper child. Really, what difference does that make? If you were a mother or father, especially a mother, and you had a child who was slightly deformed, or a child who wasn't just perfect, as most parents say, the most beautiful child on earth, wouldn't you save that one just as much as you would one that was a proper child? Why? Because he's a proper child. We'll find that as we're going to study more. She had the faith to defy the king's decree. She had to go through the fear of discovery, that maybe she'd be found casting the baby there. Maybe the baby would be found before he's cast in and destroyed. Then she had to fear the dangers of the Nile. A crocodile infects the river. Putting your child in a crocodile-infested waters was certainly not a very safe thing to do. But by faith, she did it. In Pilgrim Echoes, Brother Benjamin Barton mentions a lesson from this that I think is very good. Just think what it meant to her. As day after day, the thought passed through her heart, possibly, this will be the last day I will have this little one. Possibly this day, the child will be discovered, put to death. I can imagine on hot days, she kept her doors and windows partly closed, almost suffocating herself, for fear that if those doors were left open, someone might hear the child cry. And the child being discovered, his life might be taken. I can imagine. She must have been almost frantic sometimes when she heard a step outside for fear of the soldier coming to search her house and finding the child, cast a sword through it. Think what that mother must have suffered. By faith, she said, I can take it no longer. I put the child in the river. In the commentary of Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, it mentions an interesting thing about that river. You know, if you thought that when Pharaoh's daughter went to bathe, she bathed in the Nile, a crocodile-infested river, why would Pharaoh's daughter bathe in a river that was so unsafe? In the commentary, it mentions why. The occasion is thought to have been a religious solemnity with the royal family, opening by bathing in the sacred stream. Peculiar sacredness was attached to these portions of the Nile which flowed near the temple. The water was there fenced off as a protection for the crocodiles. And doubtless the princess had an enclosure reserved for her own use. The robe which seems to have been well known to Jochebed. Pharaoh's daughter did not just bathe in the Nile. She bathed in a separated pool of the Nile which crocodiles could not get into. That makes sense. That was her why did it. But if that pool was separated and she found Moses, Moses was placed within the fenced area. Think of the implication of that. Moses placed in the area reserved for the princess of Egypt. That area would undoubtedly have been well guarded. She would have had to sneak through. She placed the child where it would be found, not just in general to hide it, but in the very place where the daughter of the one who decreed that all the sons to be killed would be found. And think of the faith of Miriam, hiding in the same bushes. Miriam, a girl probably the age of Laura and Alexander, a girl about 12 years old probably. To think of the faith that she would have. Can you imagine Laura going into a fenced area that you'd be killed to watch your baby brother? It's an area that would be very dangerous for her to be. Jochebed must have known that the only possible salvation was discovery. And the only one who could protect that child would be one who was in a position of power to protect him. And the only one in that position of power was the Pharaoh's daughter. She may have realized that the Pharaoh's daughter desired a child. She may not. She may have been close enough. But the great faith that she would have in stepping forward. Exodus 2:3-6. When she could no longer hide him, she took from him an ark of bulrushes. It was like she prepared it. She daubed it with slime and pitch so it wouldn't sink. She put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags of the river's brink. And her sister stood afar off, to wit that she would be done to him. See, what would be done to him? And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she opened it, she saw the child. And behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him. This, she said, is one of the Hebrew's children. That was the first act of faith. Now let's look at Moses' faith. The little first act of Moses' faith was refusing to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. When did this happen? Hebrews 11:24-26. By faith, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the approach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he respected unto the recompense of reward. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years. Now this could be any one of two places. The first place that suggests itself is when he chose to slay the Hebrew, the Egyptian taskmaster. There he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. But that phrase, when he was come to years, suggests an earlier place in his life, an experience earlier than that. Coming of years in the Hebrew concept was at age 12. That's when there is a bar mitzvah. That's when they were considered an adult. That's when Lauren now becomes an adult at age 12. They now have a position of responsibility. There's a suggestion in Jameson, Foster, and Brown again. Josephus states, and this suggestion, by the way, I do not agree with, but it opens a line of thought. Josephus states that when a child, he threw on the ground the diadem and put on him in jest, a presage of a subsequent formal rejection of Thermutus' adoption of him. Faith made him to prefer the adoption of the King of Kings, unseen, and so to choose things, the very last which, flesh, very least which flesh and blood would relish. Moses would have been torn two ways. Moses was unusual in that he had two mothers, a birth mother and an adoptive mother. And he probably loved them both. Pharaoh's daughter saved him from the wilderness waters. Pharaoh's daughter had been his salvation. She provided for his education. She provided for his living in palace conditions. He got royalty through Pharaoh's daughter. But he was also torn by his mother, the one who nursed him, the one who taught him the way of the Hebrews, the one who cast him into the Nile. What would faith say that Moses would choose? That's what Paul saw. Faith chose the path of the oppressed. Faith chose his birth mother. It chose his natural heritage. But it meant giving up all the royalties of the palace. It meant giving up his claim to the throne, possibly. He may have become even the Pharaoh of Egypt himself as Pharaoh's daughter, Pharaoh's son. Do we have that faith to identify with the martyrs? Do we have the faith that looks at the oppressed, that looks at those who are downtrodden? Even amongst ourselves, there are some who are lesser esteemed and some who are greater esteemed. Do we have the faith to stand by those who are lesser esteemed? Do we have the faith to say, this too is my brother, and to be a companion of the oppressed? Hebrews 10:32-34 says, call to remembrance of former days, in which after you were enlightened, you endured a great fight of afflictions, partly being made a gazing stock both by reproaches and afflictions, and partly becoming partakers with them that were so used, For you both had compassion on them that were in bonds and took joyfully the spoiling of your possessions, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and an enabling one. Do we have that faith, brethren, to not only be willing to be afflicted ourselves and suffer bad consequences for our actions if we think they're right, but to be companions of those who are so used as part of that faith? Second act of Moses' faith was fleeing Egypt. And again, we're faced with two possibilities. The faith of the possibility refers to when he fled Egypt and went to Midian, staying there 40 years before he delivered Israel, or the possibility when he left Egypt with the Israelites in the Exodus. For two reasons, I think it's referring to the flight from the Pharaoh. It says, by faith he forsook Egypt, not forsaking the wrath of the king, for he endured his seeing him as invisible. By faith he forsook. The Exodus was directly by God's command. He was told to flee. He had the people behind him. He had the plagues behind him. He had the assurance behind him. There was not a fear indicated in that flight. That flight was purposeful, was intentional. It was not motivated by any fear. It was only by faith, but it was by following God's directions. And yet it said, he fled not fearing the wrath of the king. Well, notice as we go to the next act of faith after this, the next act of faith is the Passover. You would think that Paul meant flying with Egypt. He mentioned the Passover first, because the Passover chronologically precedes the Exodus. But the flight into the wilderness precedes. Therefore, our thought is that it's the flight into the wilderness. But how does that answer the question? Not during the wrath of the king. Paul says, by faith he forsook Egypt, not during the wrath of the king. But the Exodus account, Exodus 2, 14 and 15. And Moses said, no, and the people said, who may be a prince and a judge over us? Thinking thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian. And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. Now when Pharaoh heard this, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. The one account says Moses did not fear. The other account says Moses feared. But the question is, it does not say, and Moses feared Pharaoh. It says Moses feared. Did Moses fear Pharaoh, or did Moses fear someone else? Who did he fear? Exodus 2:14 says he feared Pharaoh. Paul reads Exodus 2:14, and Moses feared him who was invisible. He saw the hand of the invisible. The word feared can be translated just as well, respected. And Moses respected and reverenced the hand of him who was invisible. Moses did not fear in the sense of being afraid of Pharaoh, but he feared having respect to an invisible hand behind him. Moses' desire was to help Pharaoh, let my people go. God had said, let my people go. Moses desired to carry out that promise of God. He therefore killed the Egyptian to help liberate his people. But God said by this action, not yet. You will deliver Israel, but not at this point in time. Now this is reminiscent of Abraham. God had promised Abraham the land of Canaan. And he brought Abraham into that land. And Paul says, by faith, Abraham did not stay there. By faith, Abraham sojourned in the land of promise. By faith, Abraham grasped the thought that it was to be his, but 400 years later. And he's willing to give it up now for the later promise. So Moses believed, had faith in God's promises, that God would deliver Israel, but this was not the proper time, because Israel was not ready for it. They rejected him. Moses had been educated in Pharaoh's palace. There he got his bachelor's degree. His bachelor's degree was in leadership. But now he needed to get his master's degree. He went to the wilderness, and there he was educated in desert living. Survival course. His master's degree was in survival. Because he would need both. The leadership qualities to direct Israel as a nation, 2 million people strong.
and also the dirt conditions of the wilderness, to know how to survive in a barren land. And they had to survive there for 40 years. Both of these were courses that Moses must take. Moses respected God's desire to have him wait, and he waited 40 years for that promise to be true. Do we see that same invisible hand in our lives? Do we have that faith, invisible hand in our sicknesses? When we're down on the bed, they wonder what happened. Think about this last night. Last night I was depressed. I don't get depressed very often. And last night I was depressed. I thought, oh, I'm not going to be able to make a meeting tomorrow, before I knew I had to be here. And I was depressed because I couldn't be here. And the Lord overruled. And I had to say, no, Lord, your will, not mine, be done. Do we see the invisible hand in our sorrows? Dark is facing them now. What does that mean? See the mother die when you go to Poland? Does he see God's invisible hand behind that? We see it in our other sorrows when things don't go the way we want, when great troubles come into our lives. Do we see that invisible hand when we're depressed? Do we see that invisible hand at all? Do we fear the one who's invisible, the one who's behind it? Do we look for that reason? What do you have to teach me, Lord, in this experience? Do we have that faith that looks for the invisible? Moses' third act of faith, instituting the Passover. Hebrews 11:28. By faith, Moses kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, that the destroyer of the firstborn should not touch them. Keeping the Passover was certainly an act of faith. It was a belief in what God had said. The tenth plague came as a result of that. That plague is a result of the Passover. And part of the Passover scene was certainly an act of deliverance. And that's what Moses believed in. That after nine failures of getting Pharaoh to commit himself to let these people go, this tenth plague would be successful. And he would do whatever necessary to make the tenth plague work. But why all the detail? Why the choosing a lamb on the tenth day? Why the cleansing of all the leaven from the house? Why kill the lamb on the 14th day? Why sprinkle blood on the doorposts and lintels? Why eat meal with bitter herbs and unleavened bread? Why eat with a staff in hand? Why must they stay in their houses? Why? How did these things relate to the plague? How did these things relate to the delivering of Israel? How does putting a little blood on your door help you get out of an oppressed land? There doesn't seem to be any natural cause-effect relationship. It's only because, the only reason why, is because God said so. Moses had faith that whatever God said, he should do. He may not see the reason for it. He may not connect the dots. He may not see how that would bring deliverance. But God said it would. Moses believed God, and that belief was his act of faith. Instituting the Passover was a belief not so much in deliverance, but it was a belief that following God's word would bring deliverance, doing what he says. Do we have that faith to do God's will simply because he says so? So many times we read in the Bible God's wish will for our lives to do this or that. And we say, I see what God is saying. I don't see why. I don't see how this connects with my Christian life. I don't see if this really matters one way or the other if I do it this way or that way. But do we have the faith? It says, God said so. I will do so. Think back to the Garden of Eden. Back in the Garden of Eden, God said, there's one tree I don't want you to eat of. If you eat of that tree, you will die. All other trees were fine. Why not eat of that tree? What's so harmful? Eating a little piece of fruit. What's so bad in satisfying hunger with something I haven't tasted before? Only one thing was harmful. God said no. There are things we'd like to do in our lives. We might like to sometimes arrive to prosperity. But God says sacrifice. God says no. That takes faith to believe that. It takes faith to give up a good job because it requires too many hours. It takes faith to leave behind some of the pleasure of life because there's a meeting to go to. It takes faith to do it when you're not feeling well. It takes faith to do it when you've got other demands in your life, at work or your children in your lives, to follow God's commands, whatever they might be. That takes faith. Moses had that faith. Do we have that faith? The fourth act of faith was the crossing the Red Sea. Hebrews 11:29. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians saying to do were swallowed up. When I read this scripture, I was surprised. When I read the story of the Exodus, the story of crossing the Red Sea, I don't see Israel having faith. I see Moses having faith. He's got the faith to hold up forth that rod. But I don't see the faith of Israel. They're frightened. They say, let's go back. It's better to go back and be slaves than to face the death of the sea. Where was the faith in the act of the Israelites in crossing the Red Sea? But Paul said, they had faith, not just Moses. Was it fear or was it faith? Exodus reads, when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching, and they had great faith. And they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto Jehovah. They said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, as thou takest us away to die in the wilderness, wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to bring us forth out of Egypt? Where is the faith? By faith, they crossed the Red Sea. That's what Paul sees. Paul says that. By faith, they passed to the Red Sea. Where is that faith? Was it fear or was it faith? We read, they were sore afraid. We read, by faith, Moses crossed the Red Sea. Paul reads, by faith, they passed to the Red Sea. Who is right? We or they? Which is right? The Old Testament or the New? And the answer is simple. Both. Both are in the Bible. Both are right. But where is the harmony? I want you to close your eyes for a moment and to think. Put yourself in an Israelite's position. You're standing in a trap. Mountains on both sides. Mountains behind. A large sea ahead of you. I'm not going to argue with the Sea of Reeds or the Red Sea. That's an argument itself. A big sea, whatever it is. A sea difficult to cross. And then you hear the sound of troops coming. Egypt is following you. And you tell Moses, step out of that lake. You're afraid. You have great fear. But you do it. It does take faith, even though you're afraid. In fact, sometimes it takes the greatest faith to move forward when you're afraid to move forward. When you have every reason to fear, and natural fear is there, to say it still will do what the Lord said, I'll follow His way. In Exodus 14:15-16, we find a very straightforward command. Jehovah said to Moses, wherefore criest thou to me? Don't speak to me. Speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward. And lift thou up thy rod, and stretch out thy hand up over the sea, and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go into the midst of the sea on dry ground. There was the Moses command, go forward. We find ourselves, brethren, trapped, all sides around, there's no way out. The Lord's command is, go forward. Step forward. Brother I. Markerson, who was a pilgrim of Brother Russell's, and speaking in 1929 at a convention in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, had this to say. In the most difficult and appalling circumstances, the command is often to be heard by us, go forward. Though there may be mountains of opposition or seas of danger in the path of duty, yet the word is, go forward. Faith has its most perfect work in the hour of darkness. Follow its guidance, and a way shall be made in the sea, and a path in the mighty waters. When God leads us into danger, He will take us safely through. Had the Israelites gone of their own accord to encamp at Pi Hahiroth, they would have had no claim to divine protection. But because God had taken them there, He stood near to help them. It makes us all the difference in the world when we are in danger, whether we are there for our own pleasure, of our own choosing, or on the business and at the bidding of the Lord. There's great wisdom in those words. Those words were written at a time when there was great turmoil among the Bible students. They had just left the society. They had no place to turn. They didn't know which way to go. The convention at Pittsburgh was trying to find a way. They didn't know whether she was doing right by leaving the society, leaving the group that had meant so much to them and giving them the truth. They didn't know what lay ahead of them. It was a dangerous, uncharted path ahead of them. What would come next? And that's the context in which Brother Markinson said, we can't go backward. The Lord's command is to go forward. But we have to analyze, why did we get where we are? Did we get here because we did it to better ourselves or for our own pleasure? Or were we convinced because the Lord led us here? If the Lord led us here, He will lead us onward. If He did not lead us here, we'll drown in that Red Sea. It depends how we got there. But if we're convinced that we've done what the Lord's will is, and we see still the opposition ahead of us, it takes great faith many times to go forward. Sometimes you have an expression that maybe you feel different than the majority feel. Go forward if you feel the Lord led you to it. If you led yourself to it, then the Lord will punish you for going forward. It takes great faith. Israel did have great faith after they were afraid. Fear does not negate faith. Fear may postpone faith. But even in the case of fear, if you go forward, then you're overcoming that fear. Fear overcometh faith. That is the victory that faith can give us. So let's look at Paul's insights. Paul's insights, he sees things that we don't see. And that's possibly for two reasons. It's possibly because of Paul's faith, because he's reading different lessons than we're reading. Or more likely, it's because Paul had a source we don't have. Paul was living at a time when there was still a lot of oral tradition handed down from generation to generation. And this oral tradition is sometimes wrong, but often historically correct. And so he may have had information about these things that Exodus does not show us that leads him to his conclusions. Whatever Paul's reasons were, he saw things we don't see. He saw great faith in Moses' mother entrusting Moses not just to the Nile River, but to the spot where he would be found, to the spot where he would be discovered by Pharaoh's daughter. It took great faith on her part to put him, what potentially was the hands of the greatest danger, right into the hands of the daughter, the person to decree the death of him. Think of that faith. Do we have that kind of faith? Paul saw that when Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, that took great faith. It took great faith on his part to give up all the perks that were his as the grandson of the Pharaoh. All the privileges and all the material advantages. All the recognition. Possibly even the throne. By giving it up and saying, I am not an Egyptian. I am a Hebrew. I will observe my bar mitzvah. I will accept the law as my law. To turn his back on his Egyptian privileges. To accept instead the Hebrew opposition. To identify with the oppressed. That takes great faith on their part. Do we have that faith? To be willing, in case of opposition now or future, to not renounce the Lord's cause, but to say, I will stand for it, no matter what the cost. If called upon to give up material advantages, we have that faith to do it. Paul saw great faith in Moses leaving for the wilderness of Midian. Do we have the faith when the Lord says, no, flee away, get away from this experience, even though we know that he must just overcome that experience, to recognize this may not be the time, to wait the Lord's time on experiences? You know, so often we find ourselves in situations where we feel that we have a necessity to defend the Lord. Do we maybe realize that sometimes the Lord says, I'll defend myself when the time comes. For now, accept rather the harder experience of seeing wrong prevail for a time, to learn how to deal with the wrong when you do lead them out of the wrong. By faith, Moses instituted that first Passover. And doing that, he was doing something that seemingly was unconnected with the ultimate objective of releasing Israel. Oh, the slaying of the firstborn, that was connected. That was greatly connected, because he knew then they would leave. But how could you slay a firstborn by putting blood on your door? How could you slay a firstborn by killing a lamb? How could you affect Israel's deliverance, bring a lamb into your house and cleaning the leaven out? The great faith to do what God said for no other reason than God said it. We have that faith to follow God, whatever he says, no matter what. And Paul saw great faith in the Israelites crossing the Red Sea. Do we have the faith that they had? When we're most afraid, when we fear for our very lives, when we fear for even sometimes the good of our being, to find ourselves trapped on all sides and to take the least likely path out, right forward into the Red Sea, to go forward because we find the Lord led us there. The Lord led the Israel to the Pihahiroth, I can't pronounce that name, to the city by the Red Sea where they crossed. Do we have the faith that if the Lord leads us into danger, he will see us through? Even when afraid, we can exercise faith. Faith overcomes the fear and moves beyond the fear. Do we have the faith of Moses? That, brethren, is the question that we all have to face. Only belief in the invisible hand of God can now enable us to overcome. Otherwise, we will have lost the fight of faith. Faith is the victory that overcometh the world. Brethren, let's close the meeting with turning to hymn number 110. There's a hymn of faith. I know not what awaits me. God kindly holds my hand. Number 110, he knows.